FM, Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties is offering a free newsletter series called You and Your Forest. This letter series will be sent to your mailbox or inbox and can help you begin the process of learning about good forest stewardship practices without leaving the comfort of your home. Contact Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties at 518-622-9820 extension 0. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal program and employment opportunities.
WJXC underwriting support is provided by Omai International Arts Center in Ghent. Dance Omai presents an open showing of collaborative works by international dancers and choreographers in residence on Saturday, August 23rd from 2 to 4 p.m. Follow artists through the woods and fields as they interact and dance amid the Field Sculpture Park during this dance event. All are welcome to attend. For information, visit www.artomai.org or call 518-392-4747.
Hey, surfer kids, ride the waves right here in the Hudson Valley. Check out the Tiki Bar every third Sunday of the month from 6 to 8 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM. The Tiki Bar, an intoxicating mix of tropical, surf, and alternative sounds on WGXC, listener-supported community radio.
The views expressed by volunteer on-air hosts do not represent or reflect the views of WGXC. WGXC is nonpartisan and does not endorse or support political candidates. To participate in WGXC's on-air dialogue, call 518-828-0290 or email info@wgxc.org.
This is Lawrence. This is Bill Lawrence, your host today from at least 10 to 11, Tuesday. Tuesday, it's August, right, Deborah? Yeah, Tuesday, August 18th. I forgot the date. Anyway, you are listening to the World According to Lawrence, a monthly radio show hosted by WGXC. And your host, Bill Lawrence, is a resident of the town of Cairo, and comes on to give you his best verse of what he believes in and the music he likes. And he's co-hosted here with Deborah Kamica. She's the director of the library in the town of Cairo. We have been spending the last couple of months talking about things that are politically incorrect. And of course, there are a lot of those things which are politically incorrect today. So we've called last month's show, the one in July, we called it the World According to Lawrence Politically Incorrect Show. This is the continuation of that politically incorrect show, COPIC, which is just a reminder of the things that if you go out into the world and talk about them, you're going to find yourself on the bad end of people's dismay. In any case, I just want to give you a little bit of background about myself. I was a chemistry physics teacher for the town of school district of Cairo Durham for about 35 years, and I was also I am still a legislator for the town of Cairo, Greene County legislator, and we were given this opportunity to do this show, which was very gracious of the staff and owners of the WGXC radio syndication, and I'm glad to be here on a monthly basis to give you some of my viewpoints. And co-hosting with me is my good friend and sort of a director here is Deborah Kamica. I'm going to let Deborah speak for herself so you can get an idea of what she's all about. Deborah?
Okay, so I'm on the WGXC Advisory Council, and as we've said before, anything that I say or Bill says is not the opinion of anybody at the station. It's simply our personal opinions, and not sure we're inspiring too much confidence by not knowing what date it is, but there you have it.
Yeah, I'm not even sure, but I know I think it's the 19th today. Yes, that's it. Anyway, we are broadcasting from the Hudson studio. There's also one in Acre, and there's one in Catskill. So you have a choice of places to broadcast from, but only one place to listen to us at, and that is on the radio. I guess you can also archive us or hear our archive shows through the WGXC.org, and you can go on there and look for us and try to download any of our past shows. We've been on more than a year now trying to get our feet under us, and we do appreciate those of you that do listen to us. We're always looking for a constructive criticism, comments, or ideas. You can go to wblawrence65@gmail.com, and you can give me any of your own input as to what you think the show should be about. But this month we are talking about politically incorrect items, and we're going to sort of do it in the vein of things that we've come across in our lifetimes that have been, you know, sort of we've been chastised for either mentioning or talking about or, you know, watching on TV, whatever your particular medium is that you learn things from. And just to be in the spirit, of the new TV shows, the new reality TV shows anyway, there's a whole bunch of shows about being naked. There's Dating and Naked, Dating Naked. There's Naked and Afraid. And so in that spirit, Deb and I are both naked here in the studio today. Oh, now she's throwing up. Deb is throwing up. I'm sorry. But that's the way I look when I have no clothes on. And we just want to make sure that we are immersed in this idea of things that are not correct politically. And we're going to start with, or we did start with last month, a few of the items. We talked about women last month. Women are always politically correct, if you ask me. That's what my wife tells me, anyway. But I do want to just review what we talked about women. We thought that there's this belief that there's a war on women, and I happen to believe that if there were a war on women, the men would be on the losing side, because there's no way you can win against women. In any case, the idea being that they're not paid the same, they're not given the same opportunities, I just don't see that in the United States, anyway. Now, in other parts of the world, that may be true. But the war on women is, I think, a fallacy, and one that women should stay away from. Although it's a very, very good political topic, it does
help. Well, yeah, I agree with you. I don't know about a war on women, but I do disagree that women have the same opportunities as men in all fields. I think there is still some bias and certain fields. That women experience that men don't.
Well, I know that in my household, there's a battle once in a while. There's an argument over topics. But in my particular household, I always have the last words. Yes, dear. Because I just think that the women in today's society, at least the American society, are very strong, very independent. And if there's not an opportunity, they can either make it or they make sure that others know that that opportunity should exist. And the fact that they're not like the days 20, 50 years ago when the women stayed in the home and raised the children, cooked the meals. They are out there making changes to the world, and everything from politics, the national scale, all the way down to individual towns and communities. They do control a lot of the activity that goes on in today's world.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just wondering if we should talk a little bit about those women who do choose to stay home and raise their children rather than and work there and do that kind of work rather than working out in some other kind of career. Or,
yeah, I think
you know, sometimes I think these women who choose to do that, and I was one of them. After I had my child, I chose to stay home. While I did some freelance work, it certainly wasn't furthering in my career, which at that time was in publishing. But sometimes you kind of get this feeling that, you know, the women who choose to stay home and raise their children or, looked upon as not fulfilling their promise or... So I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think women who stay home are just really... underappreciated because they do a lot for the nation that nobody seems to notice. I mean, raising your children is a very important investment on every mother and father's part, making sure they grow up with the right values, with the right moral structure. And you can't do that if you're working, 12 hours a day somewhere else and somebody else is watching them. You don't want their values instilled in your children. You want your values. And I think raising your children, the first 5 years are probably the most important because that's when your child learns about everything he's going to know for the rest of his life, believe it or not. And that's going to be the way to act, to talk, to react, and deal with things that come along in his lifetime. But, yeah, I agree. Women at home, an important, valuable asset for the United States. But just for those of you that think women are a little bit too independent, we're going to just play this little song. right, that was Man Eater by Daryl Oates and, or John Oates, I'm sorry, Daryl Hall. We are playing, of course, songs that match with the topics we're talking about. It's an idea that we decided that we sort of enjoy here on The World According to Lawrence, WGXC 90.7 FM on your radio dial. If you like this particular format or don't, let us know. Again, we're looking for input to come up with a show that makes sense to us and to you. So you could always email us at wblawrence65@gmail.com. Let me know if you like this particular format. And until we get something to the contrary, we're going to probably continue doing this particular radio show. So give us your feedback and let us know what you think. All right, so we went down a few of the items last night or the last month that we talked about on the Politically Incorrect show. We talked about women, religion, foreigners, celebrities, and politicians, which are in their own way very much incorrect in a lot of ways. And we're going to start today's radio show with some of the other topics that are also politically incorrect to mention in one way or another. And I'm going to pick on one of my more interesting ones. That's called PETA. PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals and Other Animal Lovers, that tend to go really, really to extremes to make sure that animals are protected, sometimes even more protected than the very people that they're part of in this community of ours called the United States. As an example, and I use this one quite a lot, about how people deal with people and how people deal with animals, was the situation of a hiker or a jogger in California, I believe, in the mountain parts of California, which where she was jogging along and a cougar happened to come out and attack her and, I guess, killed her. And she had a home, a young child and a husband, of course. But the cougar itself had some young cubs that in a particular location that she was frequenting. And the cougar's cubs were now had no mother. And the runner, the jogger's kids, had no mother. And they were asking for donations for the mother so that the child could be raised at least in a somewhat comfortable fashion without a mom. And animal rights people also asked for donations to take care of the cubs that were being left now abandoned because the mother had been killed by the forest rangers. And it turns out that the donations came in a very lopsided form. Which, Deb, do you think got more donations, the mom or the cougar?
Well, I'm thinking you're going to reply that the cougar cubs got more funds.
But they
I'm not familiar with
this. They're 4-1 or 6-1 ratio. The cougar cubs outmatched the poor kid with the donation. Now, I understand people's love of animals. I love animals, too. And we have had pets at our house, from hamsters and pigeons and dogs and cats and I'm trying to think what else. Lizards, spiders. I'm trying to think of everything else that my children collected over the years and that we had to take care of one way or another. Animals are a big part of our society and are certainly a big part of our psyche when it comes to, love or our love for things outside of the human race. But sometimes people go to an extreme. And, again, another recent case was a picture you remember the movie Jurassic Park, right?
Oh,
Steven,
sure.
Spielberg,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Steven Spielberg took a picture of himself with the alien Stegosaurus. If you remember that particular part where the Stegosaurus was on the ground, it was sort of moaning and groaning because it had eaten the wrong plant. And Steven Spielberg had taken a picture with that as, I guess, a publicity stunt. People complained about that because they said that was not right to treat that poor Stegosaurus that way. This was a story. You can look it up on Google, but
Wait. Are they saying that they thought there was actually a Stegosaurus that had been harmed in the making of the film, or are they saying they don't like the idea of any animal creature being portrayed as being harmed by humans or suffering?
I assume it was because they either thought the animal was real and they thought it was being mistreated because nobody was doing anything about it being sick, or they just didn't like the fact that animals were being portrayed as being sick or harmed. And Steven Spielberg got a number of nasty emails and posts, Facebook mostly, about how badly he was looked in that particular photo.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is that people do harm animals. People also harm other people. Animals harm other animals. And bottom line, it's a film. It's fantasy. You know, there actually were no people around when there were dinosaurs, and I'm pretty sure there are no
stegosaurs around now.
Yeah, even a lab. I don't think we've progressed that far. Maybe in the future.
No, I have some friends that I would consider stegosaurs, but there are none that are living, actually living. And the separation of reality and, fantasy is something that a lot of people in the world have trouble with these days. We talked about that again, the mentally ill portion of our particular psychology is that we tend to want to believe things that don't exist, or we don't believe in things that do exist, and it's all a matter of how we want to see the world portrayed.
You know,
with dinosaurs especially, I mean, of course, they were on the Earth, hundreds of millions of years, but the fact is they're gone. And
well, as I recall, I did see that film many years ago, and as I recall, these dinosaurs were actually attacking people and killing them. So is the suggestion that if you're being attacked by an animal that you shouldn't harm the animal?
I'm not sure because I don't have I'm not a charter member of PETA or anything, but I do think that they go too far in their protection. I mean, they don't want any living thing being killed for food. They don't want anything being used that comes from the animal.
Well, okay, so I guess PETA is specific to animals, but anything that people eat, you could say, is alive. There are certain groups who would argue that when you eat plants, they're alive. And, you know, if it were not for plants and trees, there wouldn't be any humans. And yet, then we turn around, we eat them.
I know. I mean, there's that, again, that separation of reality and fantasy where you have to survive yourself, and of course, whether they're put on this earth to make sure that we do survive or we've made it part of our meal structure, animals do have a use in that category, and I don't think you're ever going to stop that. Plants are the same way, and I know there are vegetarians or vegans that tend to believe that that's the only way to survive is not use any animal source of food, but plants can be argued the ethical treatment of plants can be argued that they also have a living structure, and that when you kill them to eat them, you're doing as much damage as you would with animals.
Right, and that's, and honestly, I mean, this is not to diminish people's right to expect respectful treatment of animals or in pets. I totally agree that all animals should be treated ethically. I'm wondering, with the first example that you gave, if the cougar cubs got more funds simply because people assumed that the children had a father and family members and social service organizations that were going to help support the children, whereas with the cubs, maybe there were fewer sources of support.
Well, I mean, in the event that you have a cougar family where the mother gets killed naturally, she gets killed by another animal, there's no cougar welfare system that the young cubs go to. I mean, those cubs are on their own, or they perish, or they survive on their own. There's nobody helping them out. Humans is another story, whereas if a parent passes away or parents are killed, the kids are usually taken care of by the state or by the country, and that's because of the higher level thinking that humans have. So, I mean, this, again, was where I separate from PETA, because I believe in treating animals kindly, but I don't believe in treating them as humans.
Yeah, well, I think that animals, you know, are very important. Pets are very important to many people, and the animals have been shown to create a healthy environment for people, particularly those people at home alone, and they give them companionship. Pets have been shown to lower blood pressure with people who, you know, with health issues. There are those animals, you know, who are used to help people have problems with sight or other types of disabilities. And so you could see where people feel very, very, very strongly about their animals, their pets, and maybe animals in particular by extension.
And well, in particular, I know pets that I've had, I still mourn their loss. I mean, they were very close to me. Yeah. However, I did not let them sleep in my bed, or I didn't let them eat at the table. I did take them to the veterinarian for their shots, but that was not to protect them as much as was to protect others who might be bitten by them, let's say. But I think there's got to be a compromise here that animals should be treated, but they are a source of food there as well as enjoyment. And I'm not saying that, I'm going to ever have a pet pig or a pet steer, but I suppose it's possible that you could have that. And people who have their own particular likes and dislikes are going to treat animals in their own way, as long as it's not cruel.
People definitely have pigs and raise calves as pets. And and I kind of misspoke before when I said animals in particular. I meant animals in general. But let's treat people ethically and also animals. And I think, there is no excuse for blowing people up or blowing things up to protest what they perceive as poor treatment and what may very well be poor treatment of animals. There's got to be a better way to deal with that.
Truer words never spoken. And here's what Tom Lear has to say.
I'd like to take you now on wings of song, as it were, and try and help you forget, perhaps for a while, your drab, wretched lives. Here's a song all about springtime in general, and in particular about one of the many delightful pastimes that the coming of spring affords us all. Spring is here, a suffering is here. Life is skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. La 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 la. Gained notoriety and caused much anxiety in the Audubon Society with our games. They call it impiety and lack of propriety and quite a variety of unpleasant names. But it's not against any religion to want to dispose of a pigeon. So if someday you're free, why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park. And maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park.
That was Tom Lear. Tom Lear, of course, was a Harvard professor who wrote a number of songs that are kind of contrary and certainly politically incorrect. Poisoning pigeons in the park would not be a good thing to do in reality or in fantasy. In any case, continuing our discussion, let's go to Deb. How about environmentalists? Now, there's another quirky group. I mean, I think all of us are naturally concerned about the environment. It's something that we have to deal with every day, whether it's the weather or the food or the ground or the water or the air that you breathe. Environment is what makes us to who we are. And if we don't take care of it, of course, it's going to come back with a vengeance. and we may be sorry that we didn't take better care of it. However, there are some people that go too far, and I think the debate over global warming and not is one of those topics that has caught on and seems to be the reason that they blame everything for. Global warming, of course, is something that is where the human man-made carbon dioxide, man-made pollution is causing the atmosphere to warm up, melt the ice caps, glaciers, and so on. And again, that argument, with the way the Earth has been for the last 4 billion years, is hard to catch on to, in my mind, because simply I don't have enough proof that it's happening because of us. It may be happening, but certainly not necessarily because of man. I think it may be happening because of nature. That's the way things work. And it has to do with the sun, has to do with the rotation, the revolution of the Earth around the sun. All that has to be taken into account. It can't just be 100 years of mechanization by human beings. But, I mean, that's an environmental argument, and one which makes a lot of money and certainly gets a lot of play in the newspapers. And, of course, recycling is part of that, making sure that your water is filtered and clean and that companies don't dump it. There's a lot of good things that have happened in terms of protecting our environment. But I have to admit, the caveat here is that it's only been mostly in the United States and other sort of very sophisticated countries like England and France, whereas third world countries have not really taken the lead in protecting their environment because they're more concerned about survival, eating, and making sure that they stay alive. So you got Russia and China and India and the third world countries and the smaller third world countries that are just trying to survive in this time and place that we are right now, and they're not really concerned about about the environment, about protecting it for us. They're worried about protecting themselves from terrorists. They're worried about protecting themselves from not having food on the next day or not having a place to sleep. So it's a worldwide problem, but only a few countries are really taking an active part in making sure that something's being done about it. And I think as China and Russia and those big countries that were under extreme restrictions take and become open up, and they begin owning cars and buying your appliances, computers, and getting worldly, they're going to be a lot more pollution added to the atmosphere. And it's going to make the water and all the other things that we take for granted now a little bit more scarce.
Well, you know, I Bill and I disagree on the whole global warming issue. I tend to think it's a fact. However, I did hear about something, and not that this is contraindicated in my belief that there's global warming, but there's some interesting stories out there in terms of how we're addressing this the global warming issue. I think people, you know, who are really concerned about that and are trying to do the right thing and changing their lifestyle, and one of the things that they're doing is, you know, buying electric cars, which on the surface seem like a good thing, but there was an article maybe in the Wall Street Journal several months back that talked about the level of carbon dioxide that was generated with the so-called green cards, which was so much more than what was generated in building a conventional car. So when we look at these green practices, we also have to make sure that we get all of our information and get all of our facts straight in terms of how some of the best ways to address it. And you know, I think it's become a really contentious issue, and I think rather than people groups digging their heels, it would be better just to sit down and have a conversation without getting all hissy on both sides.
That's what I was trying to do. I was trying to interrupt you. So
yeah, I know.
I'm sorry.
I know.
That.
And this may be a good time to point out that we are volunteer programmers. Neither Bill nor I have done radio before, which probably most of you have guessed.
But maybe you don't want us to do it again either. That's true.
But what I want to get at is that it's community radio. So if you are interested in doing a program, please submit a proposal. That you can go online, you can contact the station, and you can do your own program. And the nice thing about living in this country is that you get to listen to all kinds of things, and if you don't like it, then you just turn it off, and you listen to something else.
Exactly. That's why I don't believe there has to be any restrictions on what's on TV, because you can just turn it off. You can change channels. Going back to green cars, though, I mean, green cars where you plug them in, they're hybrids, where you use gasoline when you have to, electricity when you can. They have to be plugged in. That electricity has to be generated from some source. Usually they use coal or propane or water to make the electricity that is going to those cars. There's no nothing free in this society in terms of environment. Whatever you do, one hand affects the other hand. So even yeah. though we try to improve things, there's always going to be a cost factor.
Right. So instead of battling and saying, everybody should be driving an electric car, it's the answer. Well, maybe in the long term it is. But how are we going to address the level of carbon dioxide that maybe is coming out of this production? So maybe there are other options, and maybe there's compromise, and certainly room for further discussion.
And that's my argument, that as American citizens, you and I are concerned about that. We make sure that our carbon footprint is as small as possible. We don't waste gasoline. We don't leave our cars running. We don't... we don't use air conditioners when we don't have to. I mean, I think the American society is very conscious of the fact that there is a cost to the environment for what we do and take as a convenience.
Okay.
In other countries,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Other countries for third countries coming online now. China is a good example. They are more concerned about getting to where we are. They're going to do it as rapidly as possible, and they don't care about the cost to the environment. I don't think they're doing the same conscious consideration of what the effect might be. I think they're just worried about getting there, and this is going to be where we have to pay the price.
Okay, so can we just talk about celebrities for a minute? Celebrities who are endorsing conservation and talking about the ecology and global warming. So some of them in recent years have gone on, record and magazine articles or on television, urging the rest of us to take 2-minute showers, I think was one of them. And then there was one particularly famous actress who suggested we all needed to use far less toilet paper, that 2 sheets should be sufficient. Now, I don't disagree that, the length of the shower and the waste of paper is a pet peeve of mine. So, at work, we tend to recycle paper to death. So, however, these are the same people that are living in these incredibly huge mansions that must be using a lot of energy to heat and cool, and they'll have more than one in different parts of the country and the world. And not only that, but they're constantly jetting off to different places. Like, they have these private jets and the yachts, and they're using up all these energies. And these are the people that are telling me to take a 2-minute shower. I suspect I'm not in the shower much more than a couple of minutes, but it kind of irks me a little bit. It's one of those do as I tell you to do, not do as I'm actually doing, which is, spending a lot of energy jetting around the world.
Devin, I actually agree on this particular topic, because I happen to believe that those of those in the celebrity business, those big shots that get the airtime on TV, are telling us what to do. And at the same time, they don't really follow their own rules. My favorite example is Al Gore, who was always he wrote the book An Inconvenient Truth about the effect of man on the environment. And here he has one of the biggest carbon footprint houses in the nation. And when he goes to a particular event to talk about the global warming, he uses a jet. I mean, and the jet, of course, spews out more carbon dioxide than any car would ever do. And that sort of hypocrisy is what kills me with these people that send this message. The showers takes me 2 minutes to get the temperature I need before I get into a shower. I don't think my water runs that fast, but when it comes to recycling, My favorite recycling commercial was the Indian who was crying because of the effect of what we were doing in the environment. I think recycling has taken over most of the nation. I think we're doing a very good job with that and improving all the time. I just don't see it happening elsewhere. And I think no matter what we do, since we're a small part of the world, we're not going to be able to keep ourselves from getting that dirty water, dirty air, dirty contaminated food and stuff from other countries that don't care as much about the environment.
Yeah, well, that's a terrific topic that could probably take up a whole show. But I do want to say that some people would object to your use of the word Indian.
Native Americans, that's right.
Is that one of those, you know, I think Native American, maybe that's changed. I think I was talking to somebody who suggested that even that's not a good use either because there were different tribes and that, you know, we should be more respectful and refer to a person as a member of a tribe. I don't know. What's the latest language that we're supposed to be using?
I think it's, I'm not sure what language they use at casinos, so I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, for those of you.
I think we're going to talk a little bit about language a little bit later on the show, so we'll get back to that.
But first, we're going
to
play a little song for all the environmentalists out there.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me the endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. Everybody! This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. I roam and ramble, and I followed my footsteps through the sparkling sands of the blinding desert. And all around me, a voice was sounding. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. I roam and ramble, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of the blinding desert. And all around me, a voice was sounding. This land was made for you and me. Here we go now. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. The sun was shining and I was strolling, and the wheat was waving and the dust stopped rolling. As the fog was lifting, a voice was calling. This land was made for you and me. Everybody, this land is yours. New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you, this land was made for me, this land
right, that was This Land Is Your Land, This Land Is My Land. That was a good song for the environmentalists, because that's the way we have to look at it. But it should be, this world is your world, this world is my world. We're all connected somehow. All right, we're going to go to our another topic, and we think there's a lot of political incorrectness, and that's education, school systems, public or private or whatever. They are all these days very, very politically correct. Your kids can't go and take medicine from the nurse because they have to have a doctor to prescribe it. They can't put their fingers into the shape of a gun because that's certainly not what we want to train our children to do in school. They can't play the normal games they play. They can't touch each other. They can't yell at each other. They can't do anything that makes being a kid enjoyable. And as a former teacher myself, I mean, I saw a lot of this in education, how it changed. Where, you know, things that today, or what I did in school years ago, I would be arrested for today because of the actions of these groups on the way children should be taught. And I'm afraid that the education that you and I got, that Deb and I got, the sort of global education where we knew a lot of things, we were very deep into topics, has sort of gone away, and all this political correctness has sort of seeped in, making it tougher for kids to really figure out what they're all about. And I mean, I'm not supporting those situations where a teacher makes a mistake. For example, the recent case where a teacher in Arizona went to the first day of school drunk. They found her in a room without any pants on, and they had no idea where she came from or what she was doing there. But obviously, she did not take the job of teaching very seriously. And I'm sure that happens more often than you believe, that teachers drink before they go to work, they drink during work, they drink after the job is over. Teaching has a lot of stresses to it, and you got to be a particular personality to put up with the nonsense that you put up with from kids sometimes, and from your colleagues, and from the administration. But in general, education, I always thought, was very highly regarded in the United States, and I'm sorry to say that I don't see that as being that much that true anymore. I mean, some of the things that teachers are expected to do is really ridiculous. And I don't know. What do you think, Deb?
I agree that it's one of the toughest jobs out there. It's incredible what teachers have to deal with these days in terms of the material, the changes, constant changes coming down from the state education department on how they're supposed to teach, what they're supposed to teach, how they're supposed to test, in what way. And also, you know, there's such a range of aptitude and adaptability in children that, you know, you could have 30 students in a class who all learn in different ways. So some children are more visual and than other children. And so, you know, any teacher in a particular classroom, it really needs to, you know, develop a way of teaching to the group. And it's a very hard job, because everybody's such an individual learning styles, and so
that's why when I was in my early years of teaching, everybody was saying that TVs and computers are going to take over the job of teaching. I never saw that being true, because you need that human interaction, and you cannot. And I'm not too happy with these online courses that kids take for college either, because I think it's all sort of shallow. But a teacher, a human being in the room that can do the Socratic method of asking questions, making you answer them, sort of brings out what's the best in education. And I see us going away from that. And when they were doing mathematics, when I was taught in high school, we were taught how to do the times tables and long division and all that. When calculators came out, it was such a benefit for those of us that wanted to do it quicker. But many thought that the calculator would lessen the skills of children in school, and I didn't see that happen. But now the Common Core program, I think, may just exactly do that. They may lessen the abilities in mathematics, because what we want mathematics to achieve is being put into this Common Core as something that's almost unachievable by the parents that were taught in a different way and by the kids that are trying to learn it. So I think the idea of skills that a teacher brings to the classroom can be done by a machine or by a group like Prentice Hall or by a computer is vastly overthought and certainly not going to work.
Yeah, but I don't think we can discount online learning either. There are some people who might learn some topics better using online a program rather than sitting in a classroom. Probably if I was in school today, I would be labeled or classified or something.
Special?
Maybe. So I was constantly being moved to the front of the classroom because I was too spaced out. I was too dreamy. I wasn't paying attention. I was looking out the window. So they kept moving me up to the front of the classroom. And I do find that I'm actually able to focus better when I'm not around a group of people. So, I think there's something to be said about offering a variety of ways to teach. And I will say, I think it was good for me to be in a sort of group environment learning because it taught me how to, you have to be able to adapt to the world to some extent, whatever your limitations are. Or differences or whatever. You still have to go out into the world and get a job and support yourself and sometimes support your family. And so it's really good, I think, to be put into different kinds of environments, to be exposed to different methods of learning because, you learn something about yourself and maybe you learn how to deal in a situation that is outside of your comfort zone.
And where does education begin? It doesn't begin in the school. It begins at home. It has to be reinforced at home. It has to be invested at home. And, of course, in my years of teaching, I found that those homes that encourage their kids to do better, the kids did better. If they went home and they were had to go to work or they had to take care of their younger siblings, it sort of lost the same impact. But we find that the New York State and, of course, this country spends a lot of money on special education. And that money, I think, though there are kids that need special treatment, I found that a group of kids in a classroom had more effect on each other than any special ed teacher because the fact that they want to keep up, they want to be part of the group. I hate segregation of kids because of their abilities. I think every kid can learn in some way from a ordinary teacher. And again, that's where the teacher is more important than ever because that teacher can pick out the weaknesses and strengths of students and do the lesson plan designed to reach the maximum impact on all the kids.
Of course, there are people who would argue that the mainstreaming certainly has its benefits, but does make it more difficult for other students in the classroom because, in effect, the teaching style, maybe is impacted by such a variety of children in the classroom that the children who are maybe learn a little bit more easily in that type of environment will get bored because the material is being taught in a little bit of a slower way or in a different way in the attempt to reach everyone. So I don't know what the answer is to that. I mean, maybe there's a way for all of these issues to be addressed. But I would leave this up to an educator, and I'm not one of those.
Everybody's an educator in their own way.
Well, in their own way. But I will say that I do think it is one of those taboo topics. It seemed like when I was substitute teaching in school. To blame the parents in any way or to hold the parents accountable for actions. Now, when I was subbing, and I only subbed for a couple of years and not very often, and I have to say I wasn't very good at it. In fact, I was probably pretty awful. Well, maybe not awful, but maybe awful. But in any case, I 3 times when I was substitute teaching, I was threatened, physically threatened. And I would tell you that the response of the school was not very immediate and not very long-lasting. So in one particular case, a young boy kept interrupting a class that I was teaching, and I asked him, politely and several times to please to take his seat, and you know, because it was disrupting the class. So he totally ignored me, and I had to send him to the principal's office. And I had other students in the class say to me, "Oh, you're going to be sorry you did that, because you know he's going to, you know, he's going to get you now." I'm like, "What are you talking about? This is like seventh or eighth grade." Anyway, the class was whatever it was, 40 minutes. At the end of that period, I had sent him to the principal's office. I walked out into the hallway, and this kid was back in the hallway going to his next class. So not only was he not suspended, which I think was a reasonable response to somebody who physically threatened a teacher, but he was not even, it was not even a requirement that he apologize to me for threatening me, or apologize to his classmates for disrupting him. And, you know, there's this sort of free-for-all sometimes, it seems, atmosphere in schools where, you know, children will get some kind of a label, and then they're sort of free to do things. And I saw this in several different schools where certain children were allowed to wander around the classroom, and other children got hushed, you know, if they even spoke in a whisper. So tough situation. But one of the things that I heard from talking to other teachers and some administrative people was they're afraid to address these issues with the parents because they don't want it. You know, it's they don't want the parents to feel like they're under attack. And quite frankly, I think they're worried about being sued. So it's very complicated.
I mean, substituting is a tough job anyway. I mean, every time I saw a substitute come into the school, I knew they were going to be stressed to the max, because kids tend to think of them as less than a teacher. And they tend to pick on them. They tend to push the limits and push the envelope to see how much they can get away with. But discipline is very important in education. And we're getting away from that, because we need to have kids know what the limits are. And if you don't have teachers or administration enforce that discipline, you're going to find that the classes fall apart, because there's no backup.
I agree. And there does seem to be fear of disciplining a child, because if you discipline the child, then the parent is in complaining, and we all need discipline. And if you don't learn it in school and you're not learning it at home, it's unlikely you're going to learn it when you go out there to get a job.
All right, let's see what we can learn from this.
Don't know much about history, don't know much biology, don't know much about a science book, don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography, don't know much trigonometry, don't know much about algebra, don't know what a slide rule is for, but I do know what and what is two. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history, don't know much biology, don't know much about a science book, don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. La ta 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 ta. History.